Okay, women, who among us has not had hormonal issues? We're not only dealing with changes our bodies go through, but also hormonal disruptors in our environment. The good news is there's help. It's by Happy Mammoth, and it's called Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. And maybe the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews of Hormone Harmony. And there are more than 30,000 reviews to date. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DATINGWHILEGRAY at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DATINGWHILEGRAY for 15% off today. Next week is the premiere of The Golden Bachelorette. It's the latest twist to ABC's long-running reality TV dating show. Wouldn't it be great if this time we get a more realistic version of older adult dating? Inside the Lives of Older Singles, that's this episode of Dating While Gray, the grown-up's guide to love, sex, and relationships. I'm Laura Stassi. Remember Joan, the tall, blonde, Golden Bachelor contestant? She's the one who wins the talent show by reciting an original poem. Joan's prize is a one-on-one dinner date with Golden Bachelor Gary. It sure seems like sparks are flying, but then suddenly, Joan takes herself out of the running and returns home to deal with a family emergency. It goes without saying, tears are shed. Well, 61-year-old Joan is back, and this time she's doing the picking as the star of The Golden Bachelorette. She'll be looking for love among a pool of 24 eligible men, ranging in age from their late 50s to late 60s. I don't want to get my hopes up, but I really do hope that this time the reality show is more, real. I mean, it's great that the spotlight is finally shining on our overlooked demographic. But is that spotlight flattering? It sure didn't seem that way to me. As the creator and host of this podcast, I felt I had to speak out. So I put together a one-hour radio broadcast special with American Public Media. It was called Beyond Reality TV, Inside the Lives of Older Singles. And it aired on public radio stations across the United States. Here's a clip from that show. If you watch the reality TV dating show, The Golden Bachelor, you know how it ends. Only weeks after 72-year-old Gary meets 70-year-old Teresa, he gets down on one knee and asks for her hand in marriage. The actual proposal was filmed in late summer, but it was a big secret until the show finale in late November. That's when Gary and Teresa reunited on stage in front of a live audience after spending all those weeks apart so as not to spoil the big reveal. The happy couple announced not only were they engaged, they were getting married in a little over a month on national television, of course. Oh boy, as a journalist whose primary focus is dating and forming new romantic relationships at age 50 and older, I can't help but think, what just happened? Sure, it's a TV show, but these are real people with homes in two separate states, almost 700 miles apart. They each have grown kids and grandkids. She's still working. He retired over 15 years ago. It's hard to believe they've already figured out the details of their life together. I'm Laura Stassi, host of the podcast Dating While Gray. And I remember the first time I heard The Bachelor, which debuted in 2002, was planning a more mature version. Through all the years and various spinoffs, like The Bachelorette and Bachelor in Paradise, the participants were all in their 20s and early 30s. Then, in February of 2020, in fact, the month I launched Dating While Gray, the producers put out a casting call. They were looking for, quote, active and outgoing single men and women age 65 and up for a new exciting dating show. I was 59 back then, too young to apply, but I was curious. The topic even came up when I talked with a woman we called Sandy. Like me, Sandy had been married for almost 30 years before her marriage ended. Researchers call it gray divorce.
For 2 years, I just was angry, and I knew I would be a horrible partner, date, anything. It's like I just wanted to work this out with myself and God and grow up and figure out how I was going to manage my life by myself. And then after that, I thought, well, I should at least go date. So I started online dating, and it, you know, I met a lot of really nice men, but would know immediately, no. Nah.
But then your friends introduced you to a gentleman, and can we give him a name just to, so we're not calling him
Tom.
Let's call him Tom. Okay. So friends introduced you? Or?
Yes. It was really weird. They invited my family, my sister, my sister-in-law, and a bunch of single women. Like it was The Bachelor or something. And I just was so disgusted by that whole thing.
He was the only single guy?
Yeah, he was late because he was buying roses for all of us. And I just thought, oh my God.
It was The Bachelor, The Gray Bachelor.
3 years after my conversation with Sandy, ABC announces their senior dating show is finally a go. By now, they've lowered the age requirement. They also aren't calling it The Gray Bachelor, go figure. It's The Golden Bachelor. I talked about it with Lauren Harris. She's an assistant professor at the University of New Hampshire, and her research focus is older adult dating. We chatted after ABC unveils Gary as The Golden Bachelor and starts promoting the show, but before the women cast members are revealed and before episodes start airing.
It's not a surprise at all that they went with a widower over a divorcee or somebody who had never been married. It is so much easier, cleaner, and it tells such a more, a nicer story.
How do you think this format is going to translate with older people?
I think all of those things, the basic format of the show, I expect will be about the same. I think they're going to throw in some pieces that are different. So I think the dates might be a little less dangerous. I remember there was one episode where they went skydive or bungee jumping off the tallest building in Sydney, Australia, something like that. I think they played like a tackle football game one time. So I think maybe not those, maybe not like very more of the dangerous to sort of in a physical health concern. But other things I think are going to be the same. You know, they've had musicians come on the show and they have it, you know, they have a dance and things like that. Or, you know, there's going to be picnics out in the middle of nowhere. They're going to travel. Part of The Bachelor, they always go to another country and explore another region. I think they're still going to be doing that. So I think the nuts and bolts of the show are going to stay the same. I think people are just curious about what it is to date as an older adult and relieved and interested to see some representation, some diversity of age on the screen.
Okay, so it's funny, but I just now, you bring up representation, and I thought, okay, that is legitimate. Mm-hmm. But is it, here's the thing I'm kind of struggling with. Does representation matter if it's in a format that's kind of cringeworthy to begin with?
I know what you're saying, yes. I've had this conversation with people, like in other shows too, of like, okay, well, they're showing this demographic in maybe a poor light. I think they're going to be a little careful about it, but I think it's just step one. Is this the end all be all? No, but maybe something like this will lead to the idea that single older adults are a market, are a demographic, are interesting. I think we're going to see a lot of contestants who are, to put it in Bachelor speak, here for the right reasons. Yes. Like I think a lot of the older women are really going to be looking for love, but it is still a television show. ABC is still casting for entertainment, for drama. Yeah. So I think we are still going to be seeing a villain. We are still going to be seeing women, you know, in arguments, in conflict, arguing with each other. There's still going to be that same drama. There's still going to be a level of immaturity on this show, right? So just because you're 60 doesn't mean that you are super mature and perfect at all times. I think it's a little naive and a little ageist to say that, you know, women in their 60s can't have the emotions and feelings and behaviors that women in their 20s, 30s, 40s might have also.
Something you said reminded me of something I read. It was like an opinion piece, but it was by a younger woman. And she was saying she wished that The Bachelor, The Golden Bachelor, weren't so hot because
that's not realistic. We need a grandpa. And you said yourself, we're going to see women who are youthful. Mm-hmm. And youthful is implying that older women aren't, we might be a little slower, but we're still very active. And so, I don't know where I was going with that other than to say, if there's, I don't want people to think of these women as outliers.
So of course they're going to choose really beautiful and really naturally beautiful women. I'm not saying had to have work done or, you know, super overdone, but just naturally beautiful older women. Women in their 60s can also be beautiful. And that's one of the things that I'm looking forward to seeing on this show and looking forward for this show to do for public concept of older adults, that older adults can also be attractive. That's not... you know, that's not an oxymoron, right? We can have older adults who are also attractive.
Indeed, the 22 single women vying for Gary's heart are all attractive, outgoing, active. They range in age from 60 to 75, divorced, widowed, and never married. The show's producers don't tout the relationship history of each woman, but we know that, like Gary, his final choice, Teresa, has been widowed. We also know the first runner-up, 64-year-old Leslie, has been divorced twice. As the season progresses and Gary whittles down to his final selection, relationship history does seem to be a plot point. I'm thinking of when Gary has one-on-one time with Ellen, a retired 71-year-old teacher who shares Gary's devotion to pickleball. Gary begins our conversation by saying he understands she's, quote, no longer married, as if the D word, divorce, is taboo. It reminds me that when I, a divorced person, started dating again, I thought it would be ideal to meet a widower. I figured he wouldn't have that stigma of relationship failure, that he was back on the market through no fault of his own. And this mindset is what Lauren Harris means when she says widowhood tells a nicer story. I no longer automatically assume that all marriages ending in widowhood have been happy and fulfilling ones, and the parties involved know how to make a relationship work. And actually, Gary's relationship status as a widower is the first thing about The Golden Bachelor that is at odds with the reality of being an older single. Maybe you think older people, if you think about older people at all, are either married or widowed. And in fact, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, the majority of people ages 55 to 74 are married, about 59% of the women and almost 70% of the men. Now let's look at unmarried people ages 55 to 74, those who are widowed, divorced, separated, or they've never tied the knot. 13% of these unmarried men are widowed. That compares with almost 47% who are divorced. And, fun fact, unmarried men in this age group are about three times as likely to have never walked down the aisle than to be widowed. So it turns out my first ever online date was with a widower. He was older and retired. Over dinner, he described his big family home and talked about his desire for exotic travel, if he could only find the right woman and pay her way. The evening ended with me concluding to myself that this man was looking for someone, anyone, to simply insert into the life he and his wife had sketched out for themselves before fate intervened. Now, I may have misjudged, but one thing I've learned is that dating after widowhood can be tricky for the spouse who's left behind, as well as for potential dating partners.
Golden Bachelorette Joan herself is a widow. Her husband died 3 years ago from pancreatic cancer. Earlier this year, on the anniversary of his death, Joan wrote a tribute to him on Instagram. She said, "For years, I've tried to think of how to memorialize him, but nothing seems quite right. I'd have to name the tallest building in the world to do him justice. He was the husband that always made me feel safe and cherished." Wow, he must have been a great guy with very big shoes to fill. I'm curious to see if Joan will connect with any divorced or never married men in her TV dating pool, or if she'll be more drawn to a widower. For the Beyond Reality TV broadcast special, I talked with someone who has a unique perspective on this topic. He's a geriatric neuropsychologist, and his name is Peter Lichtenberg. Peter's been divorced once and widowed twice.
He's now married for a fourth time. Here's another clip from the special. Can you give me any, I guess, personal example or an anecdote from your own life that where you thought, okay, this is happening because I've had this, you know, traumatic experience of being widowed?
Well, I can tell you as a younger adult, I got remarried because of the trauma, not because of the relationship. And I was kind of in a fog in a way. I mean, I really expected it just to be the same in some way. And I was also really wanting some kind of normalcy to my life again.
When you said that, I'm just thinking it's really kind of a dance we do, especially with the case of losing your spouse through death. You don't want to be so wrapped up in your life and who this person was that you don't, you know, give any breathing room to a new relationship.
Yeah, kind of. There's this dual theory which talks about kind of restoration activities and relationship kinds of activities. And, you know, both are in play for people who are divorced or widowed. They're just very different. For example, for me, it was very important, especially after Susan's death, to find a way to honor both Becky and Susan in some formal way. So I created an endowed scholarship in their name at the university Becky and I went to in the field that Susan and I shared.
What would be an example of a restoration activity one could do for divorce that would be different than through death?
I think through divorce, you often have to forgive yourself more. Everybody, you know, has some things they remember and think, oh, I wish I hadn't. But you really have to forgive yourself for mistakes that you've made and be willing to understand what the costs are for either divorce or staying in the relationship. I think that people who are dating somebody who's widowed have to understand that it is usually, now, as we said, there's always exceptions, usually important that people understand this relationship continues.
So I'm just wondering, is there a point where the relationship continues, but how, you know, it's not, you know, is it like the ghost of Mrs. Muir where, you know, it's,
well, see,
what is it?
See, that's the real question you're asking is this relationship interfering with this current relationship?
Yeah.
And that is a different story. I mean, that if it is, then, you know, you really have to kind of have some honest conversation about it.
Yeah. Have you ever had the experience of calling or heard about the experience of calling a new partner by a former partner's name?
Yes, absolutely. I never called Susan Becky, but I have called Debbie Susan, and I almost do it almost every week. I've gotten good at, you know, and Debbie says, well, that's a compliment.
She sounds like a champ. It feels like sometimes if you're going to be in a relationship with a widower or a widow, you really have to have almost no ego.
It's not no ego. You really do have to have a healthy ego that recognizes that I'm going to embrace all of you and you're going to embrace all of me. And part of you is this relationship. And how can we embrace it in a way that brings us closer? And that we share it, and it doesn't interfere and get in the way of our relationship. So it does require that kind of a healthy ego and willingness to honor the whole person that you're dating and not ask them to hide what's going on deep down inside.
Hi, Laura. My name is Sarah, and I'm a 71-year-old widow who lives in the Washington area, and I've been a fan of your podcast since its first season when a widower friend of mine introduced me to it. I feel very lucky to have found a person, another widower, who lives 500 miles away. We met somewhat fortuitously when we were not looking for a new partner, but started a relationship right before the pandemic hit. And it certainly helped us both get through that and continue to enjoy each other as we've come out of the pandemic. When I met my partner, whose name is Bruce, we were both at a position where we had helped spouses through a period of caregiving over a somewhat long period of time. And neither of us really wanted to remarry. And that was kind of a starting point for our relationship when we first started to get more serious. So far, it works well. We get together, both traveling other places and visiting each other's cities, and lots of time on Skype and Zoom and using other tools that are now available, both that we use during the pandemic and since then. I'm planning on moving to a continuing care senior community that's opening up here in a few years. It's something my parents and aunt and uncle did, and I've seen what I think is the value of moving to a place like that when it opens, and you can grow old together in the company of new friends and people your own age. Bruce's parents were in a similar facility. He's not quite ready to make the move because he's very close to his grandchildren, and two of which live in the same town that he does, and he's able to be involved with supporting them and spending lots of time with them. And just wanted to share those thoughts. Thanks very much.
You heard Sarah describe a relationship that's also a committed one, even though she and her romantic partner aren't talking about marriage or cohabitation. That's a path many older couples want to take, including Golden Bachelorette Joan. More on that after the break. It's that time of year for gift giving and for goal setting. Know what fits both categories? Learning a new language with Rosetta Stone. It's the trusted language learning program for 30 years, available on desktop or as an app. And it truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. They offer 25 languages with fast acquisition designed for long-term retention. Plus, the built-in True Accent feature gives you feedback on your pronunciation. Rosetta Stone is also convenient. Learn anytime, anywhere, on your own schedule. And here's an amazing value. A lifetime membership offers access to all 25 language courses. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a short time, Dating While Gray listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership holiday special. This offer will not last long. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your holiday offer at rosettastone.com/today today for yourself or as a gift that keeps giving. I love this time of year because whether it's a pullover or a button-up, I love sweaters. Quince is my go-to site. They're known for Mongolian cashmere sweaters priced from $50. In fact, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. That's because they partner directly with top factories. That cuts out the cost of the middleman, allowing the savings to be passed on to customers like you and me. And Quince works only with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing processes. So check out their sweaters. They also have beautiful leather jackets and so much more. Get cozy in Quince's high-quality wardrobe essentials. Go to quince.com/datingwhilegray for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/datingwhilegray to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/datingwhilegray. If you haven't tackled your holiday shopping yet, no worries. Just go to Uncommon Goods. They have unique, hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Some of my favorite things are steel outdoor citronella lanterns that you can personalize and fishing pole-inspired marshmallow roasters. I'd use them for my wood-burning fireplace. Whatever your choices are, when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. If you'd rather give an experience, you can find those too. They're more than virtual classes. They're unexpected opportunities to have fun and connect in new ways. Tarot card reading, cooking and mixology, gardening, and so much more. Plus, with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. To date, they've donated more than $3 million. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/datingwhilegray. That's uncommongoods.com/datingwhilegray for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. We're back with Inside the Lives of Older Singles from Dating While Gray. I'm Laura Stassi. Golden Bachelorette Joan says she's hopeful about finding love again. She's also said she won't move away from her kids and grandkids. She doesn't expect her partner to move away from his family either. So unless she chooses 63-year-old Pablo, the one contestant from her home state, sounds like Joan is planning on an LAT relationship. LAT, you regular listeners of this podcast know it's short for living apart together. It means you're in a committed romantic partnership, maybe even married, but you each have your own place. LAT is a growing trend, and older couples are leading the way. That makes sense to me. It's not like we're starting everything from scratch. When older people get together, we each bring with us full lives already lived. We may have careers and family and financial commitments in place that we can't easily change or don't want to. Successfully blending two lives while building a new one together might require a shift away from thinking that a traditional arrangement like living together 24/7 is the way to go. Indeed, that's what seemed to trip up Golden Bachelor couple Gary and Teresa. Only a few months after they got married, they announced they were getting divorced. According to reports, a major point of contention was where to live. Now that they've split, Gary and Teresa have both said they're open to dating. Teresa, in fact, was recently photographed frolicking on the beach with a gray-haired man who may or may not be a new beau. I wonder if they met online. Here's more from the Dating While Gray broadcast special with American Public Media.
Internet is the number one way couples meet for people of all ages. It's been the number one way same-sex couples have met for quite some time. For heterosexual couples, meeting online has been the number one way couples meet since about 2013.
That's Michael J. Rosenfeld. He's a sociology professor at Stanford who's looked into how couples meet. I have to say, I've heard a lot of online dating stories. Some are great. A few are terrible. The majority are disappointing. So much so that a lot of people have just given up. According to the Pew Research Center, half of singles 50 to 64 are not looking to date. 75% of singles 65 and older are not looking. This reminds me of a conversation I had with my college friend Michelle during season one of Dating While Gray. She's been divorced now for almost as long as she was married. Over dinner in D.C., Michelle said that when she jumped back into the dating pool, she set out to answer three questions.
Do I still have it? Can I do this? And is it hard? And so I got on Match.com, and I think I had 16 dates in 3 weeks.
Wow.
And the answers to my question were, do I still got it? Yes, I do. Can I do this? Yes, I can. Is it hard? Not really, but it's demoralizing is what I found about online dating.
Why do you say that?
I am not a shrinking, retiring person. And I found that all the men that I was going out with, at a certain point, you know, you're meeting somebody and you talk about your life and you talk about what you're doing and, you know, what your history has been. And when I said things like, yeah, I worked at the White House, I was the only woman who had that role when I was there. I was like in a substantive role that no woman had ever had before in history. It was, Laura, like I saw the garage doors going down over their eyes, that they were like, oh, she's not going to be my social secretary. She's not going to be my deputy. Not that I'm high maintenance, because I'm not high maintenance, but I think a lot of the men that I met, I got the feeling that they weren't looking for a partner. They were looking for adjunct faculty. Do you know, they were looking for They're looking for somebody who was going to, you know, like they were going to be the stars and you were going to be the supporting character. And that's not me.
When was the last time you went out on a date?
I can't recall.
Oh, that makes me sad.
I know, because I'm fabulous. Yeah, no.
Years.
Years.
I checked in with Michelle recently. She says she's open to dating, but if she does wind up permanently single, she's good with it.
Single is my best life. It's my most authentic, meaningful, and fulfilling life.
That's social scientist Bella DiPaolo. At 70 years old, Bella has spent her entire adult life unpartnered.
To me, being part of a couple would be a smaller life. It would be a lesser life. Now, I know that's not the standard way of thinking about things.
Right.
But for people like me, it's single life that offers a whole wide world of opportunities.
Since our conversation in 2022, Bella has a new book out. It's called Single at Heart: The Power, Freedom, and Heart-Filling Joy of Single Life. I appreciate Bella's work, as I also applaud and empathize with everyone who's putting themselves out there.
My name is Julie, and I got divorced 7 years ago and have been on and off online dating for the past 5 years. Happily, I'm in a new budding relationship as of several months ago with a lovely man who I met online. The reason he really was able to garner my attention is because of the green flags in his profile. His photos showed him in an everyday life, dressed for work, dressed when he was working out, or just hanging out, not doing much of anything. And most importantly, he approached me with respect. His initial message to me was so kind and so respectful that it really stood out from the clutter out there of all the other nonsense one finds in online dating.
My name is Ed. I'm from Colorado. I had been on Match and OkCupid, and I had several dates. And, you know, even dates I didn't follow up on, everything went very friendly and amicable until I got on Match and I saw this woman and I thought, oh, you know, we might have something in common. So I contacted her and she said, well, why don't we talk first before we meet? And I said, yeah, that's a good idea. And I had done that a lot with other women I had met online. So I after texting, and then I actually called her and I got on the phone, and all of a sudden, as we were talking, she became like very truculent and accusatory, and just was asking me, being critical and saying, why aren't you asking about me? And I said, I did ask several questions about you. And she became really so rude that finally I said, I'm sorry, but I think this conversation is over. And she said, fine, and then hung up. And so I was glad I never actually got to the date. And since then, by the way, I've met somebody wonderful. We've been together 3.5 years, so. I'm not a rude monster.
Hi, Laura. I am a 58-year-old woman, divorced twice. I've been single for about 5 years now. I have been on every dating website that you can think of, at least once, some more than once. On your show, I hear a lot about women and men talking about their dating history and experience. I'm in a different place. I guess I can't find a person to date. Like, I don't get any responses on dating sites. I wonder if there's other women out there that just don't get any responses and want to actually have the dating experience. Let me know if I hear from other women like that. Thank you.
I find it pretty hard to date, you know? I say that I just really need a boyfriend between 9 p.m. and 11 p.m. only. Really, that's all the time I have.
The last voice you heard belongs to Priya. She unexpectedly became a single mother in her 40s. 9 years later, she's striking out with romance. In fact, children of all ages play a role in older singles' ability to make and maintain love connections. That's according to Lauren Harris at the University of New Hampshire.
So the study is called Older Adults on the Dating Market, The Role of Family Caregiving Responsibilities.
Okay. And tell me about it.
It stems out of my dissertation research. I interviewed 100 men and women, single older adults in their 60s and 70s, about what it was for them to be single, decide to date, repartner, what dates looked like for them, and the whole gamut. Men and women both realized that the care that they gave their families and the care that their partners, their dating partners, gave their families impacted what they were looking for in a relationship, what they were looking for a partner, and their opportunities on the dating market. And so one of the big differences here was that men and women experienced these things very differently. So when women had caregiving responsibilities, and by that I mean maybe they were looking out for an aging parent, maybe an adult child had moved back in with them, or they were supporting them in that kind of way. Maybe they were babysitting one day a week, a couple days a week, whatever that might be. When they were caring for their family members, they had fewer opportunities on the dating market.
So I have to say, from my anecdotal evidence, I hear a lot of women say, I want to be with someone who, because I know he's going to understand my family because he has his own family.
Absolutely.
Were men saying this even if they had kids of their own?
Yes. A couple of men talked about the borderline physical fights that they had had with a woman's adult children, which was surprising. I know you're making this face. I was also like, okay, great. Yeah.
How old are we?
I know.
Just to show you, maturity is not connected to age.
It really isn't.
I received an email from a listener who's finally made a love connection. He isn't ready to be interviewed, but he gave me permission to share this. He wrote, I'd say we are in the mid to late caterpillar stage. Still to come will be the chrysalis stage, followed by the emergence of a beautiful adult butterfly. Of course, caterpillars sometimes get eaten by birds or die for other reasons, he wrote. So I want to see where this goes before discussing it publicly. Hey, I totally understand. I'm rooting for you, and not just to get a good story for Dating While Gray. Speaking of the show, it exists only because people are willing to be open and vulnerable in sharing their true stories, warts and all, about seeking, finding, and keeping love in the later years. As one listener said, the stories are uniquely personal and also relatable, and they help all of us out. It strikes me that this spirit of community also infuses The Golden Bachelor. Yes, viewers get a largely fantastical version of dating and romance. The show's producers edit scenes and conversations. They gloss over and leave out backstories. They miss some golden opportunities to get real and still have an interesting and fun watch. However, they also showcase older single women who totally represent. And I don't mean they're attractive, which, to be clear, they are. I'm talking about how even though they're under stress and sleep deprived and spending way too much time in high heels, they're for the most part loving and supportive and kind to each other. From my point of view, that's as real as it gets. So I may have expected too much reality from this reality show. Still, I'm curious. Will the men vying for the final rose develop friendships like the women did? Will there be any chest thumping, infighting, backstabbing? What about the kissing? I guess I'd better tune in to find out. Dating While Gray's audio production and mix is by Steve Lack Audio. Theme music by D. Peter Schmidt. Please like and follow Dating While Gray wherever you get podcasts. That way you'll never miss an episode. And if you're so inclined, leave a review letting everyone know what you love about us. For more on the show, check out datingwhilegray.com. That's where you can find bonus content, along with links to send me questions, comments, tips, and true stories through email and voicemail. You know I love hearing from you. You can also sign up for the free Dating While Gray e-newsletter, delivered most Fridays to your inbox. Also at datingwhilegray.com, click on the Sponsors tab to find discount codes from our show sponsors. Please support the companies that support Dating While Gray. To make a more personal gift, click on the Support Us tab. Again, that's all at datingwhilegray.com.
I'm Laura Stassi. Thanks so much for listening.